Hi, I'm Brian McCreath, and this is The Answered Question from WCRB in Boston for March 24th, 2017. This is a podcast of conversations with the performers you hear on the air each weekend on WCRB, from our live Saturday night Boston Symphony broadcasts and from our Sunday evening series, WCRB in Concert. This is part of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony as it was performed last Saturday by the BSO and conductor Bernard Haitink. It was part of a program that also included the Symphony No. 60 by Haydn and Claude Debussy's Nocturnes. Do you remember that big snowstorm we had just about a week and a half ago? Well, that was the day that I had an interview scheduled with Bernard Haitink, and that's why you didn't hear from Bernard Haitink on last week's podcast. But you did hear from Larry Wolf, the assistant principal double bassist in the BSO, on last week's podcast. And as for this concert, it's now available to hear on demand when you visit our website, classicalwcrb.org. Also available on demand is WCRB in Concert with Fretwork and the Orlando Consort. Again, that's all at classicalwcrb.org. As for this week, our live broadcast of the BSO features a brand new cello concerto by Matthias Pinscher with soloist Elisa Weilerstein, as well as the Corsair Overture by Berlioz and the Sixth Symphony by Beethoven, all of it led by François-Xavier Roth. He's one of the guests on this podcast. On Sunday at 7 p.m., WCRB in Concert features the Boston Symphony Chamber Players in a broadcast that includes performances from their first two concerts of the season. Most of what you'll hear involves Thomas Addis, the BSO's artistic partner, who was in Boston last fall. That was when he played the piano part of Schubert's Winterreise with tenor Ian Bostridge on a Friday, played piano and conducted with the chamber players the following Sunday, and then led the BSO in a series of subscription concerts that included one of his own works, Totentanz. And that one series of events tells you why the title artistic partner, vague though it may sound, is about the best anyone could come up with. He's essentially the combined principal guest conductor, composer in residence, and artist in residence. In the midst of all that, he and I got together at Symphony Hall, and you can hear the first part of our conversation on episode 47 of The Answered Question, when we talked about Totentanz and the other works on the BSO program he conducted by Britten and Sibelius. And now I got the second part of that conversation when we talked about the Chamber Players Concert. The big piece on the program was Schubert's Trout Quintet, and it also included a set of different pieces inspired by Shakespeare, beginning with Addis's own Court Studies from the Tempest, which is an offshoot of his opera setting of the Tempest. Then there were three Shakespeare songs by Stravinsky and two songs from The Tempest by John Weldon, though almost always attributed to Henry Purcell. So I asked Thomas Addis whether the inclusion of all those Shakespeare-themed pieces was part of some larger message or whether he programmed them just because he likes them.
Yeah, but that's why I love these songs. I've always wanted to do that. I mean, it's not that I've always wanted to do that little group. My Purcell arrangements. I did them for a one-off occasion in New York. I've never done them since. And Stravinsky's one of my favorite pieces of his and favorite Shakespeare settings. It's something very special. I just thought, it needs a concert like this where you've got the resources of the chamber players and there are various people there, and but also I'm playing. And I thought, I suppose it was a way of saying, we can kind of almost do anything within a. It doesn't just have to be a piano quintet or something. It's like it was just the variety that I like, being that sort of person in a concert. I love to have a variety sometimes. So it was just this realization of a long cherished hope to have these songs in one go.
Yeah, and I love the Court Studies from the Tempest.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's your own music. But I guess the thing that I loved about them, that there was so much variety and texture from just a few players. But I wonder, I don't know the Tempest, your opera, too terribly well. But I wondered how much how much we would hear
yeah.
of these pieces within the Tempest, or did yeah. you really just use that as a very as a starting point and then write new things for those?
They came after the opera, and it was the opera was finished very very much at the last minute, the orchestration especially. And it took me a while to kind of let everything settle. That there are these, you know, the characters in the opera, obviously there's Prospero, Miranda and Ariel, all the big characters who've got their own world of music, that's one thing. But then you get these people arriving who are the court, and it's all it's a quite different kind of thing. I was thinking, what's the music for them going to be? And I went back to 18th century music and sort of looked at things, and I won't go into how exactly I did it, but those parts of the opera, I felt afterwards, I need to kind of make a simpler version, make a small-scale version of it. So all that music is in the opera, you know, you'll hear it, but this is me kind of making sure I've got, you know, my voice leading right and kind of understanding the rhythms and this kind of thing. And it turned into this piece, which is like, and the court are really like playing cards, these characters, like the King of the Naples and the, you know, they are characters, but they do sort of one thing, but, you know, whereas Prospero is a big three-dimensional character. So that was actually, strangely, a new thing for me to write these little character sketches. And I thought, well, I'd like to make a little, you know, hand of seven cards, if you like, which is what these studies are. And it also kind of, it explores their relationships and their feelings about each other and that sort of thing in a way. So it really is a study. I mean, it was for my own purposes, but it's nice to play, particularly with these musicians. It was very satisfying to play that.
I guess
that would have been the way into the Shakespeare.
Sure. And then the Schubert Trout Quintet, I just kind of wonder what your experience as a pianist must be to play this massive thing with Ian Bostridge, Winterreise, which is so deeply and darkly emotional and psychological.
Yeah.
And then the Trout, just a couple of days later, another big piece, but of an entirely different character.
Yeah, very different world in Schubert. I mean, the Trout Quintet is probably the first piece of music, or classical music anyway, I ever heard. I mean, it goes back to before I can remember. I remember listening to a record of it, and we actually lived in a mill, so that, above the mill pond. So if I lay on my back on the floor, I could see the water, you know, reflecting on the ceiling. And I always associate that music with that effect, you know, just seeing the light from water, because it's so, the whole thing is just like water and the surface of water, and this wonderful image of the fish. There's a strange kind of poignancy about it, though, because there's a fragility in the fish. So there's these moments of very pathos, and some, particularly in the variation bit. So it's that uniquely Schubert combination of kind of lightness and sweetness, and then on the other hand, there's these kind of shadows that are in there. And if you've played Winterreise a few days before, you're more aware of the shadow side of it, because that's almost nothing but shadows. But that piece is so much in my sort of makeup, it goes right back to before I can even remember anything. So I really love playing it. It sort of just comes right out.
Oh, that's great. Well, Thomas Addis, thank you so much for spending some time talking about all of these projects with me. It's so good to have you here in Boston. Thank you,
Brian.
Thomas Addis is the artistic partner of the Boston Symphony, and you can hear him with the Boston Symphony Chamber Players on WCRB in concert this Sunday at 7 p.m. on 99.5 FM in Boston, and streaming at classicalwcrb.org. Tomorrow night, after the WCRB Cartoon Festival at Symphony Hall wraps up, François-Xavier Roth will conduct the BSO in a program that starts with the Corsair Overture by Berlioz, continues with a cello concerto by Matthias Pincher called Un Despertar, with soloist Elisa Weilerstein, and ends with Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony. When I talked with conductor François-Xavier Roth, I asked him whether there was a unifying idea among these pieces, or whether these three pieces are really meant to be heard simply as separate works on their own terms.
I would say that, for sure, when we think of a program, you can build programs, for sure, in many different directions. You can tell a story with every piece of a program, you can celebrate something, you can have a theme in the concert. And this time, we decided to build a program around, first of all, this première. Because the première, now it's a cello concerto by Matthias Pincher, is something very special because it's a total risk for everybody. The performers on stage, but also the audience, what can they expect from this very famous composer, Matthias Pincher? But it's a new piece, so it's risk everywhere. So we decided to continue my, may I say, Beethoven cycle here in Boston with the sixth. And last year I was doing Eroica, and the first time I did the number four. So it's a logical continuation. And I thought of a very fresh and very alive overture with this Corsair, because the cello concerto is much more in the darkness, much more in some very, very deep colors. So I thought it would be good to have such a contrast to start the concert between Berlioz and Pincher. So I could say it is nothing to do with a program where I tell a story, but it is more to celebrate this new première with pieces for sure also that, and with works that the audience know already.
Yes, yes. And so when it comes to Matthias Pincher, in general, what is the sound world that he creates? Some composers are known for sort of transparency or for a rhythmic kind of energy to it. How would you describe overall, when you think of all of his works, Pincher's musical language?
I think that definitely he is a German composer in the sense that there is deepness, there is dramaturgy in his music that you can feel. There is something to do with what is typically German, something to do with essential, I would say that. When some, for example, you listen to music from Bruckner or Brahms, or in our time, Wolfgang Riem or Lachenmann, every time you can find a common point between these composers, which is really the music as something that you need to live, like food, like air, like water. So in this sense, he's very German, something very essential, very deep. But at the same time, I think that he has a lot of influences from the French composer. There is lots of transparency in the orchestra, and the way he uses all the instruments, I have to say, it is phenomenal. The audience will experiment this really sounds world with this concerto. It is something very impressive, and what interests me with the new composers, new compositions, is really a music that I don't know already, or sound territories which are very new. And with Pincher, it's always the case.
Okay, so that brings my next question, because you presumably know Pincher's music in general, and with such a great description, clearly you've experienced a lot of it. Is there anything about this concerto? It's called Un Despertar. Is there anything about it when you received the music, or when you were working with him, that surprised you, that made you think, oh, I hadn't seen this from Pincher before?
It would be difficult to tell, because I know his music. I've heard many works from him, but it's my first time I conduct his music, so I couldn't compare. But what I can very easily say is it's a composer, like every great composer, he knows exactly what he wants. And it is not something cold or something analytic. For sure, his music is very complex, very written, if I may say, but it's always on a musical point of view. It's always on the expression, on the differences between this section and this section. And to listen to him describing what he wants to hear is also very interesting for me, because it's absolutely, definitely musical.
Well, so there's a very smart writer in New York named Justin Davidson, who just published an article, and it sort of takes this moment of this very few weeks that we're in right now, and it sort of uses as a launching pad the fact that there are now, with this piece, four major concerto premieres by major orchestras. He's talking really about three of them being in New York, but let's go ahead and wrap this one in because it speaks to this. There was the triple concerto by Gubadolina that this orchestra premiered a few weeks ago, a new concerto by Lara Auerbach, and another concerto by Esa-Pekka Salonen. He wonders in his piece whether there's something about the concerto form that is somehow more resonant with today's composers, or just the times of these times, so I guess I wonder, from your perspective, is there something to that, or is this just coincidence, or in the commissioning a new music process, the sort of mechanics of it, is there something that argues more for concertos than for other pieces, just from your perspective?
Well, I mean, it could be coincidence. It could be also that many great soloists have the wish to extend their repertoire, and I can easily understand that. It could be many different things, and it could be also something which is something from our time, that through this form, the concerto, it's something maybe easier, or if I may say practical, also for the orchestras, to promote the modern music. Because if it's a pure symphonic piece, maybe it's something a bit more difficult than with the soloist. The soloist is like an actor on stage and can be an ambassador of the modern music, sometimes more direct, more to do also with what in the concert there is a show aspect. So to see how the soloist interpretates and acts the music. So maybe it's something also to do with that. But I must say that it's very refreshing, and it's very healthy that all these new compositions come back, if I may say, in the programmation of the great orchestras, and especially here in America. I think that it is part also of how our society today wants to take risk and want to project themselves in something that is unknown. When you see the story of the societies in the whole history of humanity, it's very interesting to see at which time, before wars, after wars, what happened connected to music. It's fascinating. And I think we are in a special moment all around the world where, and when we could have the tendency to be more conservative or to be afraid of the others, and strangely, or with a great joy, the music landscape at the moment shows something totally in contradiction. So maybe through music, through arts, also things can move. This is my wish, because I think arts and music must be so important in our life.
I love that answer. Thank you. And I hadn't even thought on a practical term. You're right. The publicity factor actually is big. I mean, I don't think that's a bad thing, that if you have a soloist whose name you can attach, if it draws more people, I think that's great for new music. Now, speaking of the soloist, Alisa Weilerstein is an extraordinary cellist. I wonder if you've worked with her before, and what you hear in her playing that makes her playing so special. Why is it that we love her playing so much?
I think it's my first time with her. I'm very impressed. She's for sure, she has a great sound. She has a great energy. But what I admire this week is the way that she holds this new work. She plays it like it is repertoire music already. And she's committed 300%. I mean, she's totally in. So, and every new aspect of the cello sounds that developed Matthias Pintscher, she can do that with such easy. I was so amazed. Sure, she must practice a lot, but it doesn't seem so difficult. And so, and really, you close your eyes and you sometimes think, is that a cello I hear? I never thought there could be this kind of colors in the cello instrument. So she's really maybe a dream for Matthias Pintscher, because she does it so, so well and so committed. And I have to say, what is also very good is that she's not specialist of modern music. She's specialist of music, which is very good. So also for her, I can see in her eyes the excitement of doing this new thing written for her. And also there is no prejudice in her attitude. And I must say, also from the orchestra, I was so impressed with the Boston Symphony rehearsal on this Matthias Pintscher. They play with such an exigence, a richness of colors, and an intelligence, because they play with their ears. I was very impressed, and we were with Matthias and Alisa.
Well, I totally can hear what you're saying about Alisa. I mean, every time I've seen her, heard her, commitment and passion. She is so committed to what she does. So I'm glad that's coming through in this piece too. I'm not surprised that she embraced this piece so wholeheartedly. You referred before to a sort of, in a way, a Beethoven series that you appear to be doing with the BSO, because every time you come, you have done a Beethoven symphony so far, which I love, because it gives me the chance to ask you again, a sort of continuing conversation here. You said when you conducted the Fourth Symphony that every single symphony by Beethoven, in every symphony, he is experimenting with something. And so how would you describe his experimentation in the Pastoral Symphony?
Ah, the number six, the Pastoral, is really maybe the first romantic symphony. Because the theme of nature, for sure, with Vivaldi, with all the composers before, nature was already in music. Huh? But what is different with this symphony by Beethoven is really the nature seen and described by the man or the woman. So this gesture is so romantic. How do I stand? Do I sit? Do I smell what is around me every day, and how it affects my my feelings, my deepest feelings? And this is very interesting, because sometimes we can hear or see this symphony like simply paintings of natures, but it's totally the opposite. The central element of this symphony is the human being. How the human being, and in this case, how Beethoven sees himself on earth. And this is for sure a romantic statement.
That's great. Yeah, exactly. That Beethoven. Now, there are so many ways of approaching this piece. I think maybe the sixth of all of Beethoven's symphonies, to me, hearing them pretty frequently, appears to be the one with the most variety of approaches by different conductors. The highly energized, kinetic, you know, kind of electric approach, or the luxurious, relaxing stroll kind of approach. And I haven't heard you conduct it yet. And you don't have to play your entire hand here, but I'm curious about what you hear in the sixth and your way of channeling that.
I think from all the symphonies by Beethoven, this one is maybe the most contrasting work, because, for example, he doesn't use the timpanis or the trombones until the storm. So in the first movements, it's only, if I may describe, a round orchestra like Mozart orchestra, but without the strong instruments like trumpets and timpanis. And in the fifth movements, maybe you can't find such a variety of expressions, of atmospheres. So if this is very impressive. And what I try to do is, specifically with this symphony, is to go back at the same time, this idea of how he feels, Beethoven, the composer, he feels all what he sees every day or what affects his life. And also to try to, because such a known symphony, it's difficult also for the orchestras sometimes to read again. And this is something that we need, because why Beethoven is so an exceptional composer, because he took the vocabulary of the music at his time and transformed it, sometimes destroyed it, sometimes made jokes with it. And so the orchestra for sure has to be aware of what is the basic vocabulary and how we take this indications, like sometimes a provocation or against or to shake the audience. So to read again the music is so important, especially in such a piece which is so known and so played.
I have one more question, and it's more about news from you than about the orchestra or the program, which is that you've been named, as of this fall, the principal guest conductor for the London Symphony, which I think is totally exciting. It's one of my favorite orchestras, and part of why it's one of my favorite orchestras is that it sounds very different from other orchestras to me. What do you find in the LSO's approach and sound and how they do things that gives you opportunities there? And just for our audience here in Boston, what do we not hear here in Boston, or what do audiences in London not hear because they don't have the Boston Symphony as much? How do you compare these two orchestras?
It would be difficult to compare because, first of all, if you compare the two cities, Boston and London, I mean, it's two different worlds. Here in Boston, I have the feeling that you have both times, you have space for thinking, you have space for culture, you have space and time for lots of things. And London is such a rushy city where you don't have time, where you must jump a place for another one. It's a huge city with lots of energy inside. So, and the orchestras are a little bit, in comparison, it's a little bit the same. The LSO, they work like devils. I mean, sometimes they do 9 hours, 10 hours a day between the sessions, between the concerts, film productions, etc., etc. But I have to say, you can hardly remark that, because they work all the time with such a kindness. And it's an orchestra, also a dream of orchestra to work with. They are so gentlemen people. And I love this orchestra because it's an orchestra also. I worked since years with them. And the projects that we do have together, I am so excited about that. We're going to tour much more than before. Maybe we're going to come to America as well. We're going to do many things, recordings, etc. And also, I'm so happy that, and it's an honor, to start my position with them. At the same time, for sure, Sir Simon Rattle starts. So we do have a dialogue with Simon, which is so also inspiring for me. He's such a great musician and a great mind for our music world at the time. So these two aspects is really, for me, super exciting, and I'm very looking forward. But you can't compare that much the orchestras. And here you are so lucky also in Boston to have this orchestra, which is a dream, but another dream and another culture. London LSO is maybe an orchestra that plays, how could I say, on the edge all the time with a passion. And here in Boston, I see the culture of the sound maybe much more important, and the culture of also the tradition that this orchestra celebrates day after day. So it's nothing to compare, but two great and amazing orchestras.
Certainly not a competition, that's for sure. They're both great orchestras. I love them both. But I am always so excited to hear the LSO because, I mean, they can play anything and there is such energy that they put into it all. So I'm really excited that you're going to be involved there. I think it's going to be really fun. So I'm also excited you're back here in Boston. And so thank you for taking some time to talk with me. François-Xavier Roth.
My pleasure. Thank you.
François-Xavier Roth leads the Boston Symphony tomorrow night in a live broadcast that begins at 8 p.m. on 99.5 FM on the radio and streaming at classicalwcrb.org. You can subscribe to The Answered Question at iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and you'll also find us at WCRB's Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud pages. Thank you to Thomas Addis and François-Xavier Roth, as well as the staff of the Boston Symphony Orchestra for making these conversations possible. I'm Brian McCreath. Thanks for listening.